No matter whether you're looking for a pickleball community around you, you're looking for people who are into creating drones and souping up their electronic stuff, or you're looking for an Abrahamic community of family leaders who are heading in the same direction, I've got a solution for you to the problem of where are my people. It's not easy to hear, but it's a biblical truth. Here it is. You might have to help create the community that you long to be a part of. That's coming up today on Abraham's Wallet. Run your home and your dough like a biblical boss. Mark, we're going to talk about you're not alone, the key to finding like-minded people today. You have any interest in that subject?
Yes, if you can teach me, I'm all ears today.
Before we do that, I have so many things to tell you about. First thing I want to say to you, Mark, I would like to recommend a book to you and to our people. It's called, let me hype the book a little bit. This book, I've often felt, I'll meet a guy. I'm building my community. That's a teaser. I'll be building my community, meeting up with a guy. I've got a new guy right now. I'm starting to spend time with him. He's kind of like looking around my life. I think I kind of get a sense of what you're about. Well, you're kind of in a different place than I'm used to. Can you summarize your kind of thing that you're after? And it's a difficult thing. I can recommend to him Man of the House by C.R. Wiley. I might recommend Masculine Christianity. I might recommend something like Durable Trades, something like that. But is there something that describes, here's the kind of guy that we're trying to build? And I now have a little answer to that question.
What is it?
It's by our good friends over in Texas, the Viceroy guys. They've made a book under a pseudonym. Don't ask me any follow-up questions about why to have a pseudonym where the pseudonym's name is Old Grog. But Old Grog, an imaginary author, has written a book called On Ruling. On Ruling. And the idea is, well, a viceroy, if you don't know that word, it's somebody who is a stand-in for the king while the king is very far away. Like if Spain owned lands in the Gulf of America, then the viceroy would kind of, he had to rule as if he's the king. He can't really send an email to the king. What do you want to do about this? He's got to rule as the king in his little domain. So if we're going to be viceroys and be little ambassadors for God in our homes, we've got to learn how to rule. And so that's the book, On Ruling. Do you know how to rule your family? Do you know how to rule your money? Do you know how to rule the culture? Can you rule yourself and your own passions, et cetera? So it's a nice 30,000 foot view at what a kind of Abrahamic family leader might look like. So I recommend it. It's called On Ruling. The author is Old Grog. Number two, I just got to throw this out. This is something that we hit on occasionally. I got to say it again. Everyone humor me. Here it is. Our supporters and donors are a big blessing to us. So some people give $5 a month. We kind of ask for that as the kind of threshold. But there are a couple of people and businesses that give us hundreds of dollars a month. And those donations really matter. They really do. We are a small operation. And if you've received any benefit from Abraham's Wallet, from any things that we publish, or any of our episodes, or you've considered supporting us at all, please do so. That would be great. You can go to abrahamswallet.com/donate. Is that right?
Yes.
And join our team. And again, a huge thanks to people who currently support us. I take a lot of my week to meet with men who get exposed to our content and they're struggling to implement things, or they need some counsel with marriage or kids or money. And our supporters encourage me in all of those hours that do not produce money. So I just want to say thank you. And we really appreciate you and need you. So I got to throw that out.
Awesome.
Okay. I also meet quarterly with to do like a review of all of our podcasting stuff and how our YouTube page is going, et cetera. I just have to throw this out. My eyebrows went up when I was told all of our YouTube stuff. We have 199,000 views of our stuff on YouTube. I'm sure by the time this goes out, we'll be at 200,000. You know, it's not Mr. Beast numbers, but we're talking to a pretty niche audience here, and I'm encouraged by that number. So I thought I'd throw that out at you.
That's fun. We're 251 or 49 people away from 1,000 subscribers too. And just so people know, when you hit 1,000 subscribers, I've been told things change on YouTube and they start showing your content to more people.
Yeah.
I don't know if that's true. I don't know the details, but if you haven't subscribed, do just go subscribe. I don't care if you watch it or not.
Yes.
Secondly, if you're ever at an Airbnb or something like that, and you find that the poor sap before you has left their account logged in to the Apple TV or whatever there, go ahead and subscribe them as well. I think we have at least 20 subscribers that I have personally subscribed against their will.
Or the public library.
Yeah. Go get all those homeless subscribed to Abe's wallet.
That it's true. I think what you've heard is true. I think that things change. They think of people with under 1,000 subscribers as, we don't know if this is going to last. And they think of 1,000 subscribers as, oh, this is a going concern. So, you know, I am interested to see us pass that threshold.
And we will just thumb our nose at them and say, we are happy to keep talking to 20 people for the rest of our lives if that's the portion the world has for us.
That's true. That's true. Lastly, when I'm reading, I'm sure you do this too, I'm reading personal Bible time. I'm looking in this good book. It's a really old good book, has a lot of ancient wisdom in it. And I'll be reading things and I think, well, that'd be good for the Abe's Wallet people to hear. And I'll come across another story. I'd love for people to hear this. Of course, the case takes a lot of unpacking to understand what this sentence is about and this larger story, et cetera. And I always kind of feel a little guilty thinking, I wish we would take the time more on our weekly podcast to like just explain what the Bible has to say about money. So I thought I'm going to read a little bit of a famous Bible passage about money. Get your comments. I'll make some comments. And that'll be a segment. Can we do that right now?
Yeah, I mean, I'm curious what passage we're going into.
Well, it is the much heard, much beloved, and also misconstrued passage of 1 Timothy 6. I came across that this week. I thought, man, this is so potent. It's so full of delicious nutrients. So here's five verses out of 1 Timothy chapter 6, starting in verse 6. Godliness actually is a source of great gain when accompanied by contentment. And the Amplified says, that contentment which comes from a sense of inner confidence based on the sufficiency of God. Because we brought nothing into the world, so it's clear that we cannot take anything out of it either. But if we have food and clothing, with these we will be content. Something that we wrestle through, I think, during Lodo Feb, which is if we have just food and clothing, with these we will be content. But those who are not financially ethical and crave to get rich with a compulsive, greedy longing for wealth fall into temptation and a trap and into many foolish and harmful desires that plunge people into ruin and destruction, leading to personal misery. For the love of money, here comes the popular verse, bumper sticker verse, for the love of money, that is, and this is Amplified, the inserts kind of explanations into the verses, The love of money, that is, the greedy desire for it and the willingness to gain it unethically, is a root of all sorts of evil. And some, by longing for it, have wandered away from the faith and pierced themselves through and through with many sorrows. But as for you, O man of God, flee from these things. Aim at and pursue righteousness, true goodness, moral conformity to the character of God. Pursue godliness, the fear of God. Pursue faith, love, steadfastness, and gentleness. Okay, there's a whole lot in that passage. That's five verses. What did you hear?
The headline that jumps out to me is the stuff you were talking about, I don't know how many episodes ago. I think we were talking about divorce, and you said, if you're greedy, you're on the road to getting a divorce. And it was so, it didn't make sense because, like, what? And then you read this and it says, actually, listen, there's a greed and a wanting more, more, more that's connected to money and riches, the desire to be wealthy. And that's actually the root of all sorts of other stuff.
Yes.
And I think, you know, we always talk about it. Money is not evil. Money's being able to accumulate money is actually good. The Bible constantly holds that up as a positive, your ability to multiply resources, including financial resources. But there's a trap, and it looks like the doorway to the trap is actually got something to do with greed and desire for more, and even specifically money.
Yeah. There's a kind of wanting wealth, which is godly, right?
Yeah.
So the scriptures say, if you build wealth little by little, that's good. That's what God wants. Look at the ant. He patiently puts away food before the winter comes. And God's like, do that. So if you think of your ambitions, whatever you have ambitions in, I want my business to grow by 15% this year. Well, who do you think you are? What are you, greedy? No, I have ambitions for growth. We know that the master likes to see a return, and he likes to see growth. If you plow in a field and you sow seed, your expectation is the money that I spent on the seed will be exceeded by the money that I make on selling the profits of the wheat that grows. So there's something that is not just like acceptable. There's an expectation for growth that's good. And yet this passage is saying very clearly, there's something about a craving for wealth. And I like that the Amplified calls this out, wealth gotten by unethical means. And it also sounds like short-term. If you want it quicker, that's really dangerous. And if you want it unethically, that's a huge no-no. And so that's the thing that I feel like we're constantly trying to balance around here, is because men have been told for so long not to have any ambitions at all, which is a kind of Hindu or Buddhist kind of a thought. Don't want anything. Well, a godly man has all kinds of ambitions. He wants to grow, and he wants to grow the people around him, and he wants to grow his family, and he wants to be more Christ-like at the end of his life than he is today, etc. So it's not that ambitions are bad, but this passage in 1 Timothy 6 is calling out a kind of ambition that is absolutely corrosive to the soul. You know, we talk all the time about, there's no Bible verse that says you can't buy a BMW. So it's dangerous. Well, you know, should we all be only driving Honda Civics? Oh, that's the godly thing. You can't do that. But anyways, I like I like pursuing the wisdom of God in a passage that's kind of mysterious like this. And I love the fact that the Lord talks in very concrete terms about money. And he goes like, we're talking about money here.
Yeah. I'm giving a sermon at a church in 2 days.
Nice.
And I'm actually talking about Matthew 25 and the parable of the talents.
Nice.
And it's so funny to me that people's minds get blown on one side or the other of this.
Yes.
Either they're like, hey, man, I'm glad that you're teaching about money. Me, I'm not a money guy. I don't even pay attention to that stuff because God gives me just everything I need. And I say, what are you, some sort of like incapable fool?
Yes. Like,
that's sin. You're required to be the type of guy who produces returns on everything the Lord gives you.
Yes.
Or we get the, hey, yeah, I'm like the five talent guy because I've got a $6 million brokerage portfolio and, you know, we only fly first class and, well, because we can afford it. And it's like, no, also not the intended moral of the story that tends towards the other side of the road, the ditch over there.
Yes. So
I like this stuff and I've been thinking about it a lot lately. I will say we're recording this at the tail end of Lodo Feb, and this Lodo Feb, I said last night, I said, I think I could do this forever to my wife. I was like, this just hasn't felt that bad. We've eaten like kings. Now it might cool off once the chest freezer is completely empty, but
yeah,
I don't know. I think I was, my need for higher income reduced during this Lodo Feb. So maybe I'm trending towards the center as you,
that's great.
As you become more concerned with these things, I'm kind of like, well, we could probably make it on less.
Who needs money, babe? We just can live on love.
Yeah.
Well, I had a very similar thought during Lodo Feb, which was, I almost feel like I would never say this because I don't want like tomatoes beaned in the back of my head, but I think we could go 2 months and I think that might be, that would be good.
Well, are you going to fess up and tell the people that you decided to take a vacation in the middle of Lodo Feb? And we were sitting at our dinner table and my daughter goes, wait a second. I was texting with Steven's daughter and I'm pretty sure they're on the beach right now. What happens? And I texted you right away and you said it pauses.
Yeah. Our good friend, David Sheldon referred to it as Flodo Feb. He's like, when you go to Florida and you're hanging out on the beach for 3 days, that's Flodo Feb.
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, you can navigate it as you wish.
Yeah. Thank you. Okay, I'm ready. I'm ready to talk about this.
Great.
Yeah, you are not alone. The key to finding like-minded people. Okay, I think our window into the world of like what do the Abraham's wallet people deal with? It's a little bit anecdotal. You hear things from a handful of people in your normal life. I hear from a handful of people in normal life. And to a large extent, it is what the good people of Ur say, our little internet community. And what one thing that we hear repeatedly from our people is it's hard for me to find like-minded people where I am. And these are churchgoers. I mean, these are people who are very dialed into their church. Our people are leaders or they're volunteers. And yet they would say, it's hard for me to find somebody who is serious about child training, somebody who is thinking multi-generationally about the money that they're putting aside. They're not just going, well, I want to make sure that there's enough money left the day I breathe my last. They're thinking in terms of, well, there's things I want to do for my great-grandchildren now. They're trying to think in a biblical way about the use of money. Or they're thinking of their marriage, not in terms of what works or what feels good for the next 6 months, but what is God's design for the way a family, you know, and I'm thinking 10 generations works. And so how does my marriage fit into God's design, et cetera? And our people just feel sometimes like, I think I can't find anybody that's this way. And that's why they kind of can kind of clutch on to us for dear life. And I do think that's one of the uses of our community is because you can feel that you have some support and understanding, even if you feel like you're kind of standing on an island. But it's a real problem. And I just want to say this up front, that this is a problem that should be taken very seriously. It's a real problem. Without friends around you, your endurance is going to be really low when it comes to making it through trials. The pain of trying to get your budget under control, the pain of saving and investing if you live in a community where nobody's doing that, the pain of child training if you see, well, everybody around me is looking for these sovereign children, and I'm trying to raise godly kids, and who else is doing this? Why am I doing this alone? Thoughts?
I think I have lots of thoughts. You didn't share your outline with me, so I don't know where you're going to go, but I've got some. I think that you're right, 100%. I moved from the Bible Belt, actually, to the East Coast, which was a very different environment.
Yeah.
I had to find people to fellowship with that looked nothing like the friends I had been kind of in my spiritual community in Texas. And then I moved to Utah, which is kind of like moving to Turkey in terms of like how many people have ever even heard the gospel. And so that was another big change. So this has been something I've gone through a lot. I agree. It's hard, even if you're still planted in the middle of Atlanta, Georgia, where there's a church on every corner.
Right.
Every guy that just gets older typically becomes less and less relationally connected to others. So I would say this is just a problem for everybody, whether you're a 27-year-old just starting your family, or you're a 50-year-old guy who goes, I think I'm sort of falling victim to the typical path of a middle-aged, late middle-aged male. Like, everybody has this problem.
Yeah.
Every location. And so, yeah, I affirm that. I'll hold on to my prescriptions until you kind of cook
okay.
a little
okay.
bit.
Okay. Well, what comes to mind is Ecclesiastes 4, the famous passage about relationships. And it just says, woe to the man who falls down alone. He needs someone to help him up. And every one of us has that experience where we need people around us to encourage us, to grab us by the shoulders every once in a while. I just had that happen to me with some beloved brothers this week. And they go, what are you doing? I had a friend who actually said it. He said, Walt said to me, shame on you. What are you doing? And I was like, what do you mean what I'm doing? And he started talking to me about the way that I'm relating to some younger guys in my life. And like, that, what are you doing? This isn't you. Oh, yeah. Okay. I really needed that. Thank you. I have to throw this out because it's just an interesting anecdote along these lines. One of our people on and he has messaged me privately. We've had a Zoom call about it recently. I'm sure he's listening right now, is the first disciple I ever made over 30 years ago. It's a guy named Phil. He now lives in Australia. He's an English guy, but he now lives in Australia. He's now a family leader. He's like very involved in church. He's a ministry leader. He's on staff with a Christian organization. And yet, can't find another family around them that's putting their family's mission first and taking seriously this call. It's not a unique story. And how do they find people? Okay, the normal mode of how you find people is you just try to network and you just try to find peers. So what that could look like is you live in Des Moines and you go to your local church. And you got, well, I'm going to try. They said I need some people around me, so I'm going to go to the local men's meeting or the adult Bible study before the worship hour. And I lean over the guy beside me and I go, hey, would you ever want to try like a midrash with me? And the guy goes, what are you talking about? That's weird. Okay, cool. Or, you're in the couples Bible study group. Hey, would you guys ever want to come over for a Sabbath meal? Didn't that stop with Jesus? There's no Sabbath meals anymore, right? Listen, we really want to train our kids in how our family vision and culture matters to life. How about you guys? we don't know what you're talking about. We're just Christians. You're statistically not going to just bump into somebody who's on the same road you are. They're at the same place. They have the same inputs. They have the same interests. And wow, I found a guy who, he's trying to be an Abrahamic family leader too. Wow. Now I've got six guys around the fire pit on a Saturday night. Man, it's so great. That's just not going to happen. So here's what we'll do. I'll tell you my story coming to Cincinnati, which I think is instructive. You tell me your story, Mark, and then we'll expand on the biblical principle that's at play. Okay?
Cool.
Here's the story of when I came to Cincinnati. I always say about Cincinnati, I lived in Dallas at the time. Only thing I knew about Cincinnati is that the Astros used to play the Reds in the NL West. That's all I knew. I didn't know where Ohio was on a map, and I certainly couldn't have found Cincinnati. I moved here. I didn't know anybody that wanted God like I did. I mean, I'm sorry for how that sounds, but if you go into church on a Sunday morning, you go, well, these people like church. But if you lean over, you go, I really want to be a disciple of Jesus. Is that what you think? Like, I would look at you like, what is this? What? I'm just coming to church, bro. That's just my honest. I didn't know anybody that wanted God like I did. I didn't know how to find them. I didn't know any father or discipler type. I wouldn't know how to find a gray beard that would build into me. Usually church pastors are not that guy because they're busy and they're not looking for new hobbies, new projects to take on. There was no kind of community that I could just parachute into. And I didn't know what to do. And here's what I heard as I started saying, God, I would just like friends. For a starter, I would like friends. Ideally, I would like men to disciple me. And eventually, because this is kind of how I came up in post-college, was I want men to disciple also. And here's what I felt like I heard from God was this statement. You are going to help create the community that you desire to be part of. And that is not what I wanted to hear at the time. I did not want to hear, well, you've got a job ahead of you and boy, you're going to invest for the next 15 years until you can feel like you're a part of a community. That's not what I wanted to hear. But I'll just tell this one anecdote and turn it over to you. Forgive me. I think I've probably told this story before, but it definitely comes to mind. I met a ding-dong, dopey, high-energy guy named Michael Beausejour. I met him when he was in college. He had a mohawk. Yeah.
We have to pause.
Yeah.
I get flack at least once a week from my wife who goes, why haven't you had Michael Beausejour on Abraham's Wallet to tell his business journey story? So just listener, this is a quick pause.
Oh.
Someday, Lord willing, in the coming months, you will hear the whole story of this guy becoming one of the biggest studs we've ever met. Now continue.
Okay, fair. I meet this guy. He's a college kid. He's going to a Catholic school, Xavier, in town, doesn't know why. He is distracted. He has very little self-control. He had just been arrested when I met him. His goal was to have fun, be a pro golfer, and live it up. I meet this kid. He was willing to spend time with me. So I pull him aside. And I start describing a very high bar for what following Jesus would look like. Like, what are you doing with your life? Do you want God? Oh, yeah, you know, yeah, sure, yeah. Yeah, right. Okay, what are you doing about that? Oh, I don't know, I go to church sometimes. I don't think you really want God. What do you mean? I don't see that in your life, but I would be willing to help you if you want to spend a little time with me. Okay, basically, I mean, I was a little more interesting in the way I said it than that. And he was kind of interested in spending time with me. So I tried to loop him into my family life. I teach him how to spend time with God. And I introduced him to another couple of guys that I was spending time with, hanging around. I help him understand some basic ideas, like letting God deal with you and how to minister to other people, whatever. I did not give him career or life coaching. I just spent time with him. So dot, 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 as the years go by, I was the minister at his wedding. I married him to his girlfriend, who was a newly converted girl with a messy past. But she, like him, was keen for the Lord. I mean, and as the years went by, Michael's desire for pure truth went up, and his tolerance for religious, what I call patty cake Christianity, went out the window. And the reason I'm telling his story is because now, if you jump to, if the edit goes to today, Michael is one of my closest friends. We mention him regularly on the podcast because I see and talk to him a lot. He's one of my closest friends. He still receives me in kind of a fatherly way if I have something, I don't know, heavy to say to him. But he's a peer to me. That's what I'm driving at, is that he is a peer to me, and I run ideas past him, and my wife loves his wife, and we go on double dates with them. And I'm trying to demonstrate to you that in developing him, I was creating the community that I'm a part of now. That is not to say I developed every single person that is a friend of mine, or, you know, this city has me to thank for spiritual maturity. That's not my point. I'm just saying that if you develop people and pour into them as they grow up, what I think we find in scripture is that all relationships in maturity end up as friendships. And so I find myself surrounded by a handful of high quality men that years and years and years ago, I would have thought of them as this is my son in the faith. This is my little brother in the faith. And now I think of them as my equals, my peers. So that's my story. And then again, I'll tell you the biblical principles after we hear your story.
I got married straight out of college. I told you I came from Texas to Princeton University, and I was kind of geared up. This is going to be the lair of the enemy. They're going to be in class just assaulting me that I can't believe in this Jesus, and they're going to have great arguments I've never heard. None of that was true. It was probably as much of a Christian environment as Texas A&M was. I think 25% of the population there at that time attended some religious service on a Sunday. So there was at least some in the water Christianity, and I could kind of do this shopping thing of, let me visit some of the campus ministries. And all I did is say, well, who is the most serious about pursuing the Lord? And I ended up, there was people who I that said, these kids are cool and fun, and I don't think they give two craps about Jesus. And then I found these other kids. These kids are dweeb sauce, and yet they will go to the mat for God and his truth and his word. And so I ended up hanging out with the nerds. My wife still makes fun of me to this day. Well, you hung out with the nerds in college. Don't really care. It was the kind of community that I found. I met my wife. We got married right after college, moved to DC. And we start doing it again, just like I did when I got to college. Let's go shopping. And we shopped around, and we found like a big church with the light shows and stuff, and then not really our flavor. And we kind of kept bouncing. And really, that whole time we lived in Washington, D.C., we tried a tiny church. Oh, maybe this is it. We could like be influential in this church. And we ended up just kind of throwing our hands up. I mean, Stephen, you came out to D.C. once, because we said, can you help us with our house church? And I think you got there and you're like, Mark, it's just you and your buddy and the two wives. That's it. Is this really a house church, or are you just incapable of making a network of relationships? And so that time ended. We moved out to Utah, now we're moving into by far the least Christian place in the United States. But we did it again. We decided to go church shopping, and we kind of visited all the churches. And at this time, I had gotten my hands on stuff like that book, Pagan Christianity. Do you remember that book? That some really good stuff in there, some really not true stuff in there. But we had, and we're like, we're going to teach these suckers some a thing or two about how to do church the right way. And so we kind of came in with a little bit of a air of superiority, I would think. I remember having arguments with professional ministers about like the way they're doing church. And lo and behold, we weren't super popular in the small group. People were like, I think maybe this guy's trying to like break up our small group or something. I don't know. And so I think that it wasn't until we kind of realized that for us, the pathway to community was going to look like, who are the people that we are actually called towards something with? And, you know, I had no kids at the time. I was super immature in my view of family, but the Lord was kind enough to connect myself and my wife to a few people that seemed like they were actually headed in the same direction and really seriously anchored to the Word of God and the truth. And once that happened, it changed kind of our whole scene, because it was like, well, we don't need to have 40 disciples running around Salt Lake City. We could just maybe be faithful in, you know, the five close relationships we have, and things started to bloom. And then, you know the story we've talked about on this podcast. It's gone up and it's gone way down when we've been part of a community that just splintered when a few people left and everything went haywire. But what I would say right now, because I said earlier, I am about to preach at a church. We walked through the doors of that church because we kind of like you guys came to a point a few years ago where we're like, we need to find a church that we can commit to, because we want that to be a part of our weekly rhythm, is gathering with believers in this way. And maybe this isn't true in Texas, but here you can't just find one that checks every box that you wish, and this is how they do it. And I would say I came really close to just throwing my hands up again, kind of like we did in DC, and going, I guess it's just not possible. But the lessons that I had kind of learned through the many moves we had done were, who are we supposed to be connected to, and how do we start laboring with them? My buddy Rich was preaching last week, and he said, I'm not often an amen shouter, but this got a hearty amen. He said, the church is not a cruise ship. It's a battleship. And so when you walk in and look around, you should be looking for those different stations available and figuring out if your giftings and skills fit that spot. And if so, grab the gun and start firing. Not what kind of amenities are here? How's the buffet? You know, when I say the church is a battleship, like, I don't just mean your local Sunday gathering institution. Your network of relationships should be people that you can like pull on the same rope with and send rounds downrange in the same direction with. So that's been the big change for us. And all that being said, man, I would still like more friends. Even in this year's summit, one of the things I said was on my little paper, I need to start spending time with these four guys who I've kind of lost touch with, because they encourage me and I do not have a wealth of dudes in my life right now. So I've got a few, thank the Lord, but it's not Cincinnati where everyone that has come and visited you and gotten the tour of the community of faith leaves and goes, is the Lord telling me to move to Cincinnati? That's not the scene here.
Okay. So I'm going to share a verse that I think explains my story, but might not explain yours. So, okay. Here's my verse. See what you think. To me, the verse that kind of like explained it all to me was a verse that I remember hearing in the 90s and going, okay, I'm not sure what that means, but I felt like I saw it play out in my life. It's Proverbs 11:25, and it says, he who refreshes others will himself be refreshed. And I think what I wanted initially was, where's the refreshment brigade that will come help me and my family? And I didn't like the hard truth that you are the refreshment brigade, and you're going to be bringing that to your point is definitely true, which is we're asking God, to whom am I to be connected and how? But when you found a couple of people, well, I found Michael, this guy's keen. Well, then my MO isn't how will he encourage me? My MO is, how can I help this guy? How can I serve him and build him up? And what you find on the back end is that there is help and encouragement for you there. I thought of another verse that explains this. I never thought of it in these terms. You might have never thought of it in these terms. We believe in the five capitals around here. So I'll apply that to this verse. This verse is going to be talking about money, and you've heard it. You've definitely heard it inside your church talking about money. I would say it also applies to relationships. So if you listen to it in that context, see what you think of. Luke 6:38. Give, and it will be given to you. A good measure, pressed down, shaken together and running over, will be poured onto your lap. For with the measure that you use, it will be measured to you. What do you reckon to those verses and your story?
Well, I think that it does jive exactly with what I'm saying, which is, I don't know, it, maybe I made it sound like we're co-laboring in some sort of like cause where it's all external, but most of that co-laboring looks like sitting at tables, having meals, meeting in mornings with people when they have a crisis, even being willing to say like, hey, Amelia and I had a giant fight, and I'll do that type of thing even when I don't necessarily feel like I need advice, just because it builds a relationship to open up and go, look, we have our own junk, let's get involved. And so I think it's exactly like what you're saying, even though maybe I haven't had the voice of the Lord sort of clearly telling sure. me what I'm doing as much. I think what I'm doing is the same kind of thing you're doing, which is like, let's find some people and start, you know, plowing the ground and building a community out of them.
To me, the bottom line, and I honestly, I did not know this until this happened in my life, this my story of Cincinnati, like I said, but I think that I can say now that I don't know any difference between finding your people and making disciples. So the key to finding like-minded people is that you've got to go make like-minded people, and you've got to go build into them the things that God has done in you. That's what you hand on. And that's what Paul said. He said, we want to comfort people with the comfort that we have received. So the thing that you're excited about, you can go to a guy instead of going like, do you also love On Ruling by Old Grog? And the guy's going to go, I don't know what you're talking about. What you could say, hey, I know this is a little crazy. Can I take you to coffee and tell you about this book that I'm reading that I'm really excited about? And just see if something happens. Let me quote C.S. Lewis in The Four Loves. He's talking about friendship, and he says, friendship arises when two or more discover that they have in common some insight or interest. But in this kind of love, as Emerson says, do you love me? What it means is, do you see the same truth that I do? So you gotta be bold. This is why I say he who refreshes others will himself be refreshed. You gotta throw it out there. And go, would you be interested in like pursuing fatherhood the way that I am? And I have a couple of things to say. If you want to walk down this road, I can give you a couple of tips. Number one is that you might strike out with a guy or two and they just don't want it. I've walked long roads with guys that I thought, well, he doesn't really seem to get it or seem interested, but I'll just keep pouring money down this hole and see if it turns up at some point. There are people you're going to find that are like the rich young man. They don't get it and they don't want it. Well, that's okay. It's not the end of the world, but you just got to keep going to the next guy.
Can I ask real quick, have you had guys like that who it was like, man, this seems like a little bit of a fool's errand. I'm not seeing fruit. And then 2 years into it, you go, holy cow, he's blossomed. Has that happened to you? Or do you generally look back and say, when I had that hunch at 2 months in, it was still the case at 5 years in?
It's generally been true. The hunch usually, my read on a guy is usually what happens.
All right. I was hoping for encouragement the other way, but
well, I would just say this. You know, I was encouraged on the topic of making disciples by the story of the rich young man, which is Jesus throws a steak on the table. The guy goes, I'm not interested in that. And Jesus goes, that's no problem. See you later. And the guy walks away. We don't know the end of that story. We just know that Jesus set a bar for that guy. And I have seen it happen where a guy walks away because he goes, I don't think I'm interested in that. And 2 years later, the guy goes, well, the things I was interested in did not pay off. What is it you were saying again? And so I've had things pick back up before from a guy who initially said, I don't want that. So I do throw that out, but you can't run your life going like, well, I'm 0 for 20, but I'm going to just keep giving to these 20 guys, hoping that I find a friend. I'd say go fish in a different pond.
People may hear that and go, well, I've tried all the churches. I don't know. Like if you come out here, a lot of the dudes that come to our little Sunday meeting are there because somebody hit them up on a freaking street corner with a gospel. Mm-hmm. And so I would just say, unless you're out there street evangelizing, which I'm not saying you have to do that, but like this was Paul's model when he got to a town, is if there was no believers for him to just start developing, he started preaching until somebody responded.
That's true.
So sometimes I think we artificially limit the potential pool of people in our network to just the guys that are already maybe sort of tangentially interested in Jesus stuff.
Totally agree with that. And let's go back to Phil, my Australian disciple guy. The way that I met Phil was that I wanted to meet people when I moved to England. And so I coached a youth basketball team. And Phil was in my basketball team. And our common interest was basketball. So that's what we spent our time talking about. And as he kind of looked around my life, eventually he got interested in, now, what's your whole deal with Christian blah, blah, blah? What's that all about? And I led the guy to the Lord. And he became, before I left England, like my closest friend in England was this kid who was 17 at the time. So I totally agree with that picture, which is, again, it's another version of refresh others and you'll end up refreshed. I also have this tip. If you think, well, I'm not exactly, Mr. Bible leader guy. I feel like I'm like a 2 on the maturity scale. I can't be go developing people. I would say if you're a 2 on the Christian maturity scale, there's a lot of 1s and 0s around you that you can build into. So please do not disqualify yourself because you don't think that you're the example of what being a Christian man is. That is not a problem. And that's not a limiter. I got one more little anecdote to tell and then I'm done.
Okay.
Friend of the pod, Jeff Davenport, lives in Colorado. Also not a stronghold of evangelical maturity. He's had trouble finding people. He's had these strikeout moments. I'm trying to take a guy to coffee. I don't know. There's nothing there. I spent 3 months trying to help this guy. He's not coming along. My point is he keeps trying and he's had frustrations. Lately, he has heard, he gets jealous when we talk about Midrash. Oh, we sit around talking about the Bible. Oh, guys, there's guys over here. He's like, give me a break. I don't, there's no group like that for me to jump into. What he did was he had a friend that came to him and said, you know, there's like the men's group at the church. I don't really want to do that. But what I would like to do is get together with a couple of guys and just read the Bible honestly and just talk about it. And Jeff said, I can do that. And so he kind of raised a flag. And now there's a group of men. And Jeff, being Jeff, was like, here's what we'll do. We'll read the Bible, but only if we can guarantee there's going to be really good coffee there. So I'd like to mandate that it's going to be coffee and Bible. And the couple guys are like, okay. Well, he now has like five guys in this group. And Jeff just told me this past week, this is like the highlight of my week, is spending time with these guys. They're doing something very simple. He said, we're reading about the kings of Israel and seeing what lessons we can learn from each of the kings. That's it. He's like, and the guys are like applying themselves to the study. There's one like scholarly guy who's bringing us historical perspective. And what's happening in Jeff is that he's refreshing others and finding himself refreshed. And he feels like, man, I've kind of got a crew right now. And these are guys who are growing up and trying to lead their families and be Christian leaders where they are. And anyway, the bottom line, I'll reiterate one more time, is that if you find yourself on an island, start asking God, who are the people that I can give myself to and start pouring into? And what we find is the fruit, you'll be surrounded by the fruit and you get to enjoy it.
Yeah. And Stephen, this doesn't even just have to be, let's sit around and read the Bible. Like I'm having a gathering of, I think, five families in just a few days of local families. They all go to different churches, but they all sort of caught on to this low-dofeb thing. And it took years. We've been doing it for years here, and our friends have been viewing it, and they saw it. Like we thought by now all our friends would have built sukkahs and we would do all these things. Nope, none of those caught on. But
yeah.
But low-dofeb caught on. And so I said, let's take advantage of the first year in which we have like a ton of people doing this, and let's throw a giant funny potluck at the end of low-dofeb, where you just bring whatever's left in the back of the pantry. And even those little opportunities where there's some shared thing going on, and I'm gonna try to make it fun.
Yes.
You know, we have a little daughter, Esther, who has friends. It was an easy excuse for me to say, hey, part of why we named her Esther is because there's an Esther in the Bible, and the Jews, they have this party every year called Purim, and we just decided because we have an Esther, we're gonna do a Purim party. And we got to invite, I got to read the book of Esther to a bunch of five-year-olds back in the day and just
That's
throw
great.
A big party for people. So it doesn't always have to be coffee shop or men's Bible study. It can be really anything that you can use as a hook to gather people in. And we need friendship. We need it. And so I love what you said, that the friendship and discipleship are relatively indistinguishable in the kingdom and from a biblical basis. So I would just encourage you, as you listen to all this, we know most of you are discouraged when it comes to finding your people. And I want to tell you, you are free to go out and find people that you can invest in. Just like you said, Stephen, you're free to use all the tools that the Lord has put at your disposal to make friends. You can even, spoiler alert, you can even spend money to develop relationships. And so I just encourage you to do it. And if you're feeling exhausted, whether you jump into and hang out with us and get like a shot in the arm, I need that living in Utah. I need outside people to occasionally give me a slap on the back and say, keep at it. Wherever you get that, it's okay. Keep pressing on. That's just my encouragement to you. And don't give up. We're here for a very short amount of time. And so keep pressing on. Try to find those people. And when you find them, squeeze all the juice you can out of those relationships, because even just doing that will typically attract more relationships to you.